Welcome back to the program. It is the Midday Show here on Rogers TV and 570 News. It was started 7 years ago by some high school students in Nova Scotia who wanted to stand up for a classmate who was being bullied. And now this is something that has become a global phenomenon. Travis Price and his friend began an anti-bullying movement at their high school after they noticed a boy getting picked on for wearing a pink shirt. It's now a fixture in 14 different countries, and this is something that we are happy to support here at 570 News and the Rogers Kitchener Radio Group. And joining me on the line now is Danielle Law, Assistant Professor, Youth and Children's Studies and Psychology at Wilfrid Laurier University. Danielle, thank you so much. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you. How are you?
I'm doing very well. It's incredible how something like this Pink Shirt Day has, it has gone viral. It's gone global, if you will. What are your thoughts on Pink Shirt Day and what it kind of represents?
Well, I think it's a really great movement to bring awareness about bullying and about cyberbullying. And while we should be very conscious about how we are behaving towards other people and our relationships towards other people for the whole year, I think it's very important that we have this day of acknowledgement.
When I think about something like this starting up in a high school and kind of how big it's gotten at this point, I mean, clearly that means that people are listening, people are taking a look at the facts, that people like yourself and others have been working on and trying to understand, how detrimental bullying can be. I mean, it must feel good that something like this is at the point where it is.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, I think it's important to bring awareness and that people are encouraged and motivated to want to do something about it. Yeah.
Yeah, the best part for me, of course, is that it was started by students because, I mean, when I take a look at bullying and I read studies and I read articles all the time saying, numbers, how many students get bullied and all that. I mean, the fact that it was kids that started this means that the people who can change it are listening, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, kids are experiencing this all the time, whether it's at work or even in the school ground and online. It's something that's happening 24/7 these days. So the fact that kids are stepping up and wanting to do something about it just shows us how close to them it is and it's how prevalent it is for them.
Mm-hmm. And of course, I mean, numbers could always be higher. Bullying is still around. It's still happening. When Danielle, when a child or a kid in high school sees something happening that they know, their gut tells them that this shouldn't be happening, it's bullying. Some speak out, some don't. Those that don't, why is that?
Oftentimes, and this is most students, fail to speak out simply because they're scared and they are afraid that they're going to be the next target. So a lot of students will see it and they'll want to do something about it, they'll think about doing something about it, but then they won't simply because they're afraid. Other students actually might join in with the bully and want to say mean things back because they want to also seem cool or they want to have their voice heard in some sort of way, and so then they'll join in. And so these are the kinds of things that we want to stop in its tracks, is having these people join in. And we also want to encourage people to step up, because research is showing time and time again that we only need one person to stick up for the victim, and then other people will find the courage to also step up and then stop the bullying in its tracks.
Where does that thought come in? Where does it come from, that thought of wanting to join in the bullying? Where does that come from?
I think a lot of it has to do with, because oftentimes our relationships with other people, especially in schools, there's this idea of wanting to fit in and have feeling of belonging. And when they see somebody who's being outcast and then they're seeing someone who has more power, and that's what bullying is, it's about power, then they want to also feel powerful. And so they think, oh, well, if I join in, then I will be part of a powerful group. And so what we want to help teach kids is that, you know what, joining in does not actually create power, and we want to create power in a more positive way rather than a hostile way. So why don't we create positive power by sticking up for the victim and creating a caring environment rather than a hostile environment?
Is bullying a learned behavior?
Well, it can be. I mean, we do know, research does show that individuals who come from certain backgrounds or from certain experiences may or may not be more likely to engage in aggressive behaviors. But we also know that there are various circumstances around how people are developing and where they're coming from and their experiences and how they're perceiving the world that might lead them to engage in certain behaviors.
We're on the line with Danielle Law, Assistant Professor, Youth and Children's Studies and Psychology at Wilfrid Laurier University. It is Pink Shirt Day. We're talking about this anti-bullying movement that was started at a high school in Nova Scotia 7 years ago today. You mentioned cyberbullying, and that's a very interesting one to me, because how do parents monitor that? I mean, that's almost impossible to monitor 24/7 because, well, kids are at school and kids, have cell phones and kids are, hanging out with friends and who knows what they're looking at. I mean, that's tougher than your kind of traditional recess bullying, is it not?
Right. It's extremely difficult to monitor and it's extremely difficult to know what's going on, especially since kids and teenagers tend to have one leg up on parents in terms of knowing a lot more about technology than their parents do. And so with their cell phone in their pockets, they can definitely say mean things and nobody will really know what's going on in the moment except the victim and all the people on Facebook and social media. But in terms of adults knowing what's going on, it's much more difficult. And the thing that we're finding in research is that monitoring and controlling what kids are doing doesn't necessarily stop them from actually using the internet responsibly or irresponsibly. So what we are finding is that it's the relationship that kids have with their parents and that open dialogue that they have about how to be kind online, how to be kind in general, how just because you can't see the other person doesn't mean that you should be saying these things and posting mean things online. And so what's becoming much more critical is about sitting down with children at a very young age, and as soon as they're starting to use technology and setting guidelines around what does it look like to be responsible online, what does it look like to be using using social media in a kind way, and just really engaging in that conversation very early. And when we're setting these guidelines, it's really about having that dialogue to set the guidelines together rather than having parents just set concrete rules right off the bat, but having the child feel very involved in the discussion. Because really what we're seeing is that when it comes to monitoring software and controlling software, kids can bypass that. And if they really want to engage in certain things, they can just go and do it at the library or at their friend's house or somewhere private where their parents can't see what's going on and they can bypass all of the software. So what we really need to do is teach responsible use rather than just the Band-Aid solution of controlling their use.
Before I let you go, Danielle, cyberbullying, is that something that is being treated on the same level as you know, and I'll use that phrase, traditional bullying, you know, playground, schoolyard bullying? I mean, obviously from a research perspective, I believe it is, but the general public, are they looking at cyberbullying and understanding that it's maybe just as bad and can be just as detrimental as the traditional sense of bullying?
Yeah, I think in recent years with all of the very devastating evidence of what cyberbullying can do, it's brought a lot more awareness of how important this issue is. And I think a lot of parents and a lot of teachers are on board with just how serious it can be and wanting to learn more about what to do about it.
Great to get your thoughts on this, Danielle. Thank you so much.
Yes, no problem.
And that is Danielle Law, Assistant Professor, Youth and Children's Studies and Psychology at Wilfrid Laurier University. My thanks to her for her thoughts on Pink Shirt Day and on bullying. And you know, it's not all bad news. Coming up in just a few moments, I'll tell you a truly inspiring story about Josh the Doorman. You may have heard this before. If you haven't, you have to hear this. It's a truly inspiring story about turning something negative into something positive. It can happen. It's not all bad. We're back with much more. It's the Midday Show on Rogers TV and 570 News.
There's never a dull week on Parliament Hill. We've got you covered on the week's events with McLean's on the Hill political podcast. Available online on 570news.com.
All right, welcome back. 11:18 on the Midday Show on Rogers TV and 570 News. And before I get to my next guest, a funny story, just a quick little story, Matt. Something that happened to me earlier today, because it turns out it's Pink Shirt Day,
as
I mentioned, to stop bullying. And so I knew this was the case last night. And before I go to bed, I go into my closet and I look and I say, I know I have a pink shirt. And I pull it out. And Steph's like, I don't think you have a pink shirt. And I'm like, no, I'm pretty sure I do. So I go in, I pull the shirt out. She's like, that's purple. I'm like, what do you mean it's purple? This is a pink shirt.
Can you not see colors
properly? Well, maybe I'm colorblind. That affects men, you know. It's a serious thing. But no, it turns out I'm not colorblind, and the shirt is purple. It's like a little thin pinstripe thing, right? So
not colorblind, just dumb?
Just a doofus is what I'm saying. You're absolutely right. So I come in the morning. I'm like, why am I going to get a pink shirt? So I reach out to Channers in Waterloo, and Mark's like, you know what? You're a doofus, but come down. and we'll fix you up. It'll be good. So I go down to Channers. Mark's fixed me up with this pink shirt. It looks fantastic. Made in Canada, by the way. You know what? If you need a pink shirt, just head on over to Channers in Uptown Waterloo, just on King and Willis Way there, and tell Mark that you heard it here. And he'll tell you I'm a doofus, and then he'll hook you up with a cool shirt. So
it's a nice shirt.
Yeah, well, thank you very much. This is a very inspiring story. It truly is. Josh Yount, his story gained international attention, all because of one simple gesture of kindness. At a very young age, 16, Josh lost his father. Already depressed and bullied, he says he succumbed to darkness. The bullying was so bad that Josh, his mom, and his sister moved to London, just down the 401. And that's when things started to change. He began holding doors open for his schoolmates in the morning at lunch after school. That's what he started doing. Kids thought it was weird at first, but then he started to notice a change. Students started being nice to him. They knew his name. They nicknamed him the Doorman. That year, in 2011, he was voted prom king and won the Best Personality Award. He is now fundraising so he can make his life mission to travel to schools and share his story. And he's raised just over $1,000 of a $5,000 goal. The website is GoFundMe.com. And Josh joins us on the line now. Thank you so much for doing this. How are you?
Hey, good, thanks. How are you doing?
I'm doing very well. So, I mean, Josh, bullying and Pink Shirt Day, this day must mean a lot to you.
Yes, it does.
Tell me about your story. I mean, you had a very kind of rough upbringing. You lost your father, as I mentioned. You were bullied in school. Why were you bullied in school?
I was bullied. I was a shy kid. I was easy to target, right?
Mm-hmm.
After losing my father, it was really hard, and I got bullied even more, and it was just a really rough time.
So your family moves to London, and when that happened, you started holding doors open for your fellow schoolmates. Why did you start doing that?
Moving to a new place, I didn't know what to expect. It was a new beginning. I wanted to make a change. I wanted to put myself out there and show people who I was. And so I started doing that the first day and every day since. And I could have stopped the first day, but I just kept on going. And the responses I got for the first few weeks were kind of negative, but after a while, people started to realize that I'm just doing it just to be kind. And they opened up to me over time, and I've got a lot of friendships with them. And people would be like, hey, man, how's it going? And it's just amazing.
Well, you know, Josh, I've watched a number of news stories on a number of different stations about you and the nickname that you were given, the Doorman, and it's really cool to see all of the people in your school, all the students, when they're walking by you in the hallway, they just say hey, and they'll call you the Doorman. And but it's a positive thing. It's kind of a sign of respect. When you first moved to London, when you first went to school,
And that first day that you made the conscious decision to say, you know what, I'm going to take this rough past I've had, all the bullying that's happened in my life, I'm going to take that and I'm going to try to turn it into a positive. And you decide to do something so simple as to just hold a door open for people. What was the reaction of people that very first day? Do you remember that?
People were like, why? Like, they were shocked. They didn't know, like, why I was doing it. They were looking at me weird, asking me if I come here often or why. They're really confused. And not many people hold doors, so they were very curious and they thought I was really weird.
So you were doing something kind. You were doing something so simple as holding the door open for people, and people were wondering why that was happening and that it was a little bit weird at first. How long did it take before people started realizing what you were doing and before people started appreciating what you were doing?
About a good 2-3 weeks. And then after that, people would start to realize that, hey, he's just Josh Johns at the door. He's going to be greeting us every morning. And it's something they look forward to every day. And it's just amazing. Like,
do you like the nickname, the Doorman?
Yeah, it suits me pretty well.
Is it something that you still use or what?
Yeah,
people still know you as the Doorman.
Yeah, they sure do.
That's pretty cool. So you've taken it upon yourself. What you want to do now is you want to share your life story. You want to travel to schools and share your story. You've started this fundraising campaign on GoFundMe.com/TheDoorman. You've raised over $1,000. It's a $5,000 goal. Why is it so important to you to spread your story, to share your story?
It's important for me to... be able to go to the States and share my story and give people hope and like kids who are being bullied, help them and give them words of acknowledgement and show them that a simple gesture and how believing in yourself and continuing to not give up can get you somewhere in life. And
it's an inspiring story, Josh. It really is. I love the fact that you were able to take something negative like bullying and turn it into something positive and that it's worked out for you. And I'm so glad. And it's great to hear you say that you want to spread this story because you know that there are other people being bullied out there right now as we speak. There are other people being bullied, and you want to tell them, you want to show them that it doesn't have to be negative all the time and that a simple, kind gesture can change their lives.
Yes.
Josh, thank you so much for doing this. I really appreciate your time, and best of luck, okay?
No problem. Thank you so much.
All right. Josh Yount right there. Some say he's better known as the Doorman. Moved to London, lost his father at the age of 16, was bullied pretty much all his life growing up. He says he succumbed to darkness at one point, and when his family moved to London, he decided to just change things. No excuses and just change things. And it all started for him with a simple gesture of holding a door open for people. At first, it was weird from his other classmates, but then as you heard Josh say, they came around, and now he's known as a Doorman. And now everybody respects and likes him, and he's on this mission to share his story. And he's raised over $1,000 of the $5,000 goal. He wants to travel to schools and share his story. GoFundMe.com/TheDoorman. It is Pink Shirt Day today, by the way, so hopefully you have your pink shirt on. We'll be back with much more. It is the Midday Show on Rogers TV and 570 News.
Today, we live in a 24-hour news cycle. Things are changing every second. Sign up for 570 News breaking news alerts at 570news.com.
All right. Well, look at that. If you're watching us on Rogers TV, look at our friend Annie right there on TV. Yeah, look at that. Not every day you get a dog in studio. Welcome back to the Midday Show here on Rogers TV and 570 News. Wednesday's chilling with dogs is a free weekly service that involves dogs as a form of therapy. Really cool stuff. It is primarily aimed at university students who miss the day-to-day interactions with their family pets as a result of living away from home. Now, this center's clinical director, Christine Lund, is actively researching the benefits of pet-assisted therapy and isn't surprised by the program's appeal. Delton Glebe Counseling Center is located on Albert Street in Waterloo and offers individual couples counseling and art therapy, as well as counseling services for children in the form of play therapy. And Christine Lund is the clinical director at Delton Glebe Counseling Center and joins us in studio. Thank you so much for being here. How are you?
I'm great. Thanks for having us today.
Tell me about Annie. What kind of dog is Annie?
Well, Annie is a 14-month-old Portuguese water dog.
So well-behaved.
Well, sometimes, most of the time. I've been working with her through obedience training so that she can be a good presence and helpful assistance for both clients and students who want to come by the Delton Glebe Counseling Center.
Yeah. You know, I have a almost five-year-old German Shepherd at home, and so I know that it helps when you put them through training.
Yeah, it really does.
It really, really helps, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Talk about why this is working. Why is something like this?
Well, that's a good question, why it works. There's been a lot of research done in the last about 35 years around pet-assisted therapy. It actually started with doing some research around cardiac patients, and they discovered that the outcomes for cardiac care were higher for people who interacted with dogs. And from then, it's generalized to other situations. What I've discovered and what students have been reporting is that interacting with the dogs provides a distraction from the stresses and strains of university life. They experience the dogs as an unconditional accepting figure.
Yeah.
At least they interpret it that way, that the dogs are happy to see them. They enjoy the physicalness of contact with the dog, of petting them, playing with them, giving them treats. They find that to be helpful. And at the end of it, they report that their mood has shifted almost always in a positive direction. So the impact has been positive from interacting with the dogs.
Interesting. Producer Haley Zimak was telling me when you guys walked into the newsroom.
Right.
Everybody just got happy all of a sudden.
Absolutely.
Right?
Yeah, they were all happy to see Annie, wanted to interact with her. Of course, Annie is a very social dog and loves to interact with people. And so it's sort of a mutual enjoyment, right?
Yeah,
she enjoys
sure.
to interact with them, and the new staff really enjoyed interacting with her.
Sometimes working in a newsroom can get a little stressful as well.
I would expect so.
Maybe we need a newsroom dog. What do you think?
You could maybe make the case. That's right.
What is it specifically? You mentioned distraction, and that's interesting to me because some people might think of that as, I don't want to be distracted during a work day. But that's not where you're coming from, right?
No. What the students are reporting is that particularly in times of stress when there's papers due, they're feeling, perhaps also the stress of what the future might hold. There's a lot of unknownness around that in this day and age for university graduates. What they report is that the distraction's helpful for them in the sense that it pulls their attention away from things that perhaps would be more negatively impacting them and perhaps also demotivating them and kind of creating a situation where they're almost frozen to act. And they report that the distraction is helpful, and then they leave. They feel more motivated to study, more motivated to finish papers. More motivated to
look
for a
job. So they become more productive.
Absolutely.
Is this something that workplaces, companies have kind of been getting on board with?
In a very limited way. I think there are some companies that allow their staff to bring a pet to work.
Sure.
And they're happy about that.
Well, why not? I mean, if you're working in an office setting, a cubicle, let's say, why not bring a little doggy bed or something?
Right.
It makes you feel better, right?
Annie comes to work with me every day, and she's either at the seminary at the Laurier campus or over at the Delton Glebe Counseling Center. And students and staff and faculty interact with her, and she's a very positive presence.
Oh, there she is.
There she is, yes.
That's so funny. Are there certain types of dogs that perhaps, I don't want to say work better, but are better at this than others?
Well, obviously you need a dog that's socialized well to people, and if you're using more than one dog, they need to be socialized to other dogs. So often you'll see golden retrievers, labradors, but they've used shepherds, small dogs. I chose Annie as a Portuguese water dog because she's hypoallergenic.
Okay.
And we also use Jaeger, who's a soft-coated Wheaton Terrier, who is also hypoallergenic.
Right. Okay.
Just to make the opportunity more accessible. We don't have to worry about allergies with potential students. But you could use it. I mean, in some situations, they use cats.
Right. Yeah, cats.
And,
I've heard that one, too.
And horses and other animals as well.
Animals.
So it's not just dogs. But certainly in my context, we're just using dogs at this point.
Dogs are just so loving.
Well, they are.
Know? Cats are a little bit more independent, aren't they? Right.
Yeah,
they might come to you, they might not, right? Dogs will always welcome you at the door.
Yeah. If you're going to use a cat, you'd have to have a very socialized cat, right? But
I actually play fetch with my cat.
Oh, really?
It happens. Yeah. He brings a little crumpled up piece of paper back.
Yeah.
So.
Oh, that's great.
How long have you been doing this?
I started about 14 months ago, and with an initial trial, just kind of a pilot to see whether or not university students would find it helpful. I started in December exams of 2013.
Okay.
And it did seem to be helpful. So then I've done it again through the April and December exams of 2014. I'll do it again in the April exams this year. And then we started the drop-in on Wednesdays at noon at the Glebe Center. Starting in September. So we've had the weekly drop-in since then.
Right. I want to talk a little bit more about the research. The research, if it shows, you know, like you mentioned, that it just brightens your day.
Right.
People can become more productive. Is this perhaps something, I mean, what's the issue then with more companies or more places jumping on board? Is it a matter of getting the word out? Is it that, do you think?
I think so. I think partly it would be getting the word out, perhaps people having the experience. You know, a company or another institution might not want to jump on board full bore until they have an experience of it to see the positive effect. But certainly nursing homes, hospitals, they have pet therapy coming in. Some places will have resident cats or dogs, but often they'll have sort of weekly visitors who come in with pets.
Is that different, having a pet there as a resident, as you say, as opposed to bringing one in every once in a while?
Well, I think if you have one there, you obviously have a greater ability to develop more of a relationship with that animal than just somebody who's there maybe for half an hour a week or something.
Mm-hmm.
That would be the case that we're seeing, particularly with students who have more regular interactions with Annie, that, you know, they develop their own little relationships with Annie, and she has a whole troop of students who come by on a regular basis to pet her, either at the Wednesday drop-in or sometimes they come by my office and just see her. So I think there is benefit to having the ongoing presence of the animal that develops a longer-term relationship. But even the short interactions, as your news team would I think, attest to, has some benefit as well.
Matt, how are you feeling? Are you feeling better right now because there's a dog in the studio?
100%.
100% better. There you go. So I know you guys got to get out of here soon. So this is something, so people can just come by and
drop in,
they
can come
by
the Delta and Glebe Counseling Center. And as you said, we're on the corner of Seagram and Albert Street, right across from Laurier.
Mm-hmm.
It runs from 12 until 1 every Wednesday. So it's open to university students, but it's also open to the public. Just as our counseling services are open to the community, people can drop into the dog events on Wednesdays too.
Very cool. Just come in and see
just
how
you
like
in.
It.
You don't need to pre-register to come in for the dogs. You can just come for 12 and we're there till 1.
Thank you so much for coming in today. Yeah, really
thanks
appreciate
so much
your
for
time.
Having
it was
us.
Great meeting Annie.
Yeah, it was great
Thank
to
you
be
very
here.
Much. Christine Lund right there, the clinical director of the Delta and Glebe Counseling Center. We're back with much more. The Midday Show continues after this on Rogers TV and 570 News.
Being a parent is a round-the-clock job. So if you missed today's parent report on 570 News, you can listen anytime on the audio page at 570news.com.
It is, it's amazing what a dog can do. In studio now with talk show producer Haley Zimak. And my thanks to Christine Lund, the clinical director of the Delta and Glebe Counseling Center, and 14-month-old Annie for being in studio. Isn't it amazing what a dog can do? Lift the spirits of everyone?
Brightens your day. We had so much fun petting her. She was kind of walking me down the hallway. I was getting tangled up in the leash. And I thought, you know, the cold weather would be made so much more bearable if I could get out and enjoy it and walk a dog. And
what do you think it is? What do you think it is about dogs? I mean, I know there's a bunch of research that proves and shows that everybody's spirits just get lifted when, I mean, we have a whole newsroom right now that's like, well, thank you so much. You just made our entire day. Everybody's feeling so much better. Something clearly happens. But what do you think it is? I mean, what is it about animals that just make us feel better.
And more specifically, dogs, too, because I think they love you unconditionally. They're so happy to see you. Like, look at Annie. We just met her. She was laying down. Casey was giving her belly rubs. Everyone's hugging. And, you know, and she loved it. She was just so kind and friendly. And it makes you feel better, too. I think anything that's cute and fluffy and furry and warm, you just, you feel
they
better.
They love life. Yeah. The best thing about dogs for me is that they love life. There is nothing... It doesn't matter what the case is. It doesn't matter that it's snowing outside. It doesn't matter that there's construction. It doesn't matter that they're in a car stuck in traffic. They love life. They love being alive. And it shows in the tail wagging and in Annie jumping around. She doesn't care that she was just brought into a radio station and met a whole bunch of people she's never met in her life. And it was like, I don't know you, but I love you. I don't know you, but I love you as well. Like, it's just, there's no way of being upset.
And now she's back to the center because from 12 until 1 today, she meets more strangers. Christine mentioned it is primarily geared toward university students, but what I think is so cool about this program is it's drop-in. It's free. Members of the public are welcome. So even if you're in that area on Albert Street and you're having a bad day or whatever, you just need some affection, you can just walk in during this hour on Wednesdays and give a tummy rub. Like, how cool is that?
It's awesome. And not to mention that there are plenty of places around the world who are actually making money off this stuff, right? I mean, you hear about those cat cafes.
Yeah, in Japan, I know.
New York.
Yeah.
You know, you have them in New York where you go in, you have a coffee, and there's a different room if you want to go play and hang out with some kittens, you can. And people are charging for this, and people aren't doing it because it just brightens everyone's day.
And people are paying for it. I actually did a series with John Baker from Desire to Learn a few years ago for Rogers TV. So that building is just across the street from us, and I went in there. It's open concept. They have a yoga room, snacks, very cool. But the one thing I loved is they have animals.
Yeah.
So there's dog beds, there's treats and toys, and you know, it's not, they're not running wild. It's not crazy. You don't see people rolling around on the floor not doing their work. The animals are there. They're calm. You know, you get to take a break with them, walk outside, and everyone just loved it. So I don't know. I don't know if it would work in all workplace environments.
Right, obviously, not in all workplace environments.
I was thinking about here.
Well, here, it could work here.
I think
if Mike Collins is listening, he should probably, you know, at least send me an email saying yay or nay to the dog, because then I can bring in my 105-pound German Shepherd.
I don't know about Dax, because the last time I saw Dax, I could not eat any Cheetos without him getting up on my lap. So if Dax is
Up on your lap.
Well, not getting up on my lap, but being very... He was very friendly.
Nosy?
And yes.
Yeah.
So I don't know if...
All right. James, what do you say?
Yes, good morning, guys. Just wanted to point out, with regards to the dogs, there's a few organizations that that match dogs with veterans suffering from different ailments, for instance, PTSD. And it's just amazing, you know.
The therapy that they provide and the way they make people feel, you're absolutely right, James, and I appreciate the phone call. He's right. It works with like emergency service personnel. It works with veterans as well. I know that they use them a lot.
Seniors, end of life, hospice care is another thing that can be done.
Let's talk about National Cupcake Day, because this is a good opportunity to mention this. You did a lot of baking for National Cupcake Day, which was this past Monday.
It was lot of fun.
You did a lot. You know what? You raised $127.27. Correct me if I have that wrong.
Well, we raised.
You did a lot of the work, and it went to the Kitchener-Waterloo Humane Society for National Cupcake Day for all the pets there. It's fantastic. Why do you think you got so involved in that?
It was fun, and I'm an animal lover, and I did send a picture, so hopefully we can get that up on Roger's TV.
Yeah.
There's Lucy.
Lucy,
so
your
this
cat.
Is my beautiful cat. She's wearing...
Sassy.
She's wearing a necklace, so this is how I play
with
you
put pearls around...
I did.
Yeah.
I did. She hates it. And then we have another picture as well that you're in, because, of course, you help support National
the
Cupcake
picture,
Day
yeah.
as well. Yeah, we have Jennifer Campbell and Mike Farwell as well, the hosts of the Country Morning Show on Country 106.7. So I have to say, I was at Jen's. Tara Connors from Chime was there as well. Mike Farwell stopped by. Eric, you bought and ate probably the most cupcakes of anyone
in
this building.
I've had 8 cupcakes in 2 days.
It was a team effort. It was a huge effort. But no, it was actually just... you know, something that someone suggested that we do and tweet out the pictures and get involved. And I am not a cook or a baker by any means. So I actually made those cupcakes. That's the first time I've ever made cupcakes. They were from scratch. Vanilla, butterscotch chippets, vanilla icing, and then I toasted the coconut. So
the
I was
coconut
really
one was exceptional.
Thank you.
The coconut. Did you, Matt? Now, Matt bought me a cupcake.
He did.
I blame you for the four cupcakes in the one day. Because I had
hold on.
I already had three.
All right, I gave you the fourth.
You gave me the fourth cupcake.
All right, then yes.
And when you put a cupcake in front of someone and somebody's just had three of them, they might say, "Oh, not now." But then as the day progresses, you're
going to
eat the other
and this
cupcake.
Is what's going to happen, because I set aside a few for Jennifer. She was going to take it to Aeson and some other kids, and she forgot, and she's busy, and it's her birthday today, so she's got a great treat from the cake box. So I've told you, there is one cupcake left in our office, and I know by the end of the day you will have eaten it. And I hope you do, because, again, we raised $127.20 at the Rogers Kitchener Radio Group. So awesome. Thank you so much to everyone who stopped by the office. And it was exciting to take it. There were dogs out, so I played with them and hung out for a bit, and really nice volunteers. And then Amy is great there, so I had a jar full of money, and yeah, she took it and said thank you. So it's nice to do that.
You know, let me take this opportunity just to thank Jolene Knott for getting us involved with this, because she does work for this. She's a good friend of mine. She does work for the Kitchener-Waterloo Humane Society. So let me just throw a thanks to her as well, because she's the one, that's how I heard about this thing. Mm-hmm. I mean, I know National Cupcake Day happens, I mean, what a great way to, you know, show some support for the Humane Society. So,
yeah.
I also thought this might be a good opportunity to talk about what we're doing on Friday.
Okay.
Because I'd like to get the word out about this. So a lot of the times we talk about, police and our police service. Whenever we talk about these kind of issues, you know, people always have strong opinions on whatever it is, right? I mean, if it's the budget or if it's misconduct or whatever the case may be, people have some pretty strong opinions and some pretty strong stances on police officers, as they should. They're held to a higher standard. But we thought, why not get some firsthand experience with this so that we can more accurately talk about it on the air? So we're going on a ride-along with the Waterloo Regional Police Service this Friday. It's the night shift. You're going to be at Central Division here in Kitchener.
Exactly. Yep. Going to be going in Kitchener, and we're meeting just before 5 o'clock. They have their briefing and everything, which will be interesting. You find out everything there. And then that's exactly it. We will be riding shotgun with the officers that Mike Hafner has chosen for us to be paired along with, which we appreciate. Chief Brian Larkin said he'll be looking forward to reading our tweets
as well. We're live tweeting it.
We are live tweeting.
So, yeah. So this will be Friday night from 5 in the afternoon to 3 in the morning.
Yes.
So you're going to be in Central here in Kitchener. I'm going to be in Waterloo. And then on the Monday, which is the 2nd, right, we're going to have the chief in studio with Mike Hafner. Sergeant, will he be here?
I believe so. Okay. I'm not quite sure. We will be focusing definitely on the budget.
On the budget, right.
With Chief Larkin, of course, we'll be taking your calls, and then we'll be sharing our ride-along experience,
yeah.
We'll
let you know how
really
it goes.
Fun.
Yeah. All right. So I'm looking forward to that.
Me too.
Coming up, this is something that has made a lot of headlines, and it has to do with someone who was a temporary foreign worker, came to Canada, was involved in an accident, and now there's a discussion about deportation happening. We'll talk with her lawyer, Chris Badaluk, when we come back. It is the Midday Show here on Rogers TV and 570 News.